And welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations, better known as Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. Our student host is with us, but before I allow him to introduce himself, I want to introduce you to the moment, and that is the Quest moment. A cornucopia of physics dictates that where there are vibrations, there must be a medium. And all vibrations possess a wave nature. You see, in our community, our art is in fact and in spirit the medium through which our airwaves travel. Where there is no medium, there are no vibrations. And that being said, I'd like to repeat myself by saying music, like poetry, has a message, and history, like a diamond, shines clear to the truth. Words have meanings that we can comprehend, like definitions. And without any further ado, our first segment of Diamonds, presented by our student host.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. Again, we're live on 89.5. And I want to start off again with the diamonds. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. Now, for our diamond today, it was inspired by the events that took place Wednesday morning at 11, where the first ever woman vice president was inaugurated into office. And I wanted to give honor to that moment by introducing y'all to somebody who was a pioneer to all of this, who inspired upcoming women, you know, to participate and have a higher standing in politics. And her name is Shirley Chisholm. And Shirley Chisholm was born Shirley Tia St. Hill on November 30th, 1924, in a predominantly black neighborhood in Brooklyn, New York. Chisholm spent part of her childhood in Barbados with her grandmother. After graduating from Brooklyn College in 1946, she began her career as a teacher and went on to earn a master's degree in elementary education from Columbia University. Chisholm served as director of the Hamilton Madison Child Care Center from 1953 to 1959 and as an educational consultant for New York City Bureau of Child Welfare from 1959 to 1964. In 1968, Chisholm made history by becoming the first United States African American Congresswoman, beginning the first of seven terms in the House of Representatives. After initially being assigned to the House Forestry Committee, she shocked many by demanding reassignment. She was placed on the Veterans Affairs Committee, eventually graduating to the Education and Labor Committee. Chisholm became one of the founding members of the Congressional Black Caucus in 1969 and championed minority education and employment opportunities throughout her tenure in Congress. Chisholm went on to make history yet again, becoming the first African-American and the second woman to make a bid for the U.S. presidency with a major party when she ran for Democratic nomination in 1972. While announcing her bid, she says, "I am not the candidate of the black America. Although I am black and proud, I am not the candidate of the women's movement of this country. Although I am a woman and I am equally proud of that, I am a candidate of the people, and my presence before you now symbolizes a new era in American political history." Although she ran a spirited campaign, Chisholm was unable to consolidate the support of influential black leaders, giving way for South Dakota Senator George McGovern to claim the Democratic nomination. Shirley Chisholm also, you know, co-founded the Democratic Club in Brooklyn, and Chisholm was one of the early members of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or known NAACP, and also the National Organization for Women, also known as NOW. And she was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame in 1993. And she will end up passing away January 1st, 2005, at the age of 8. And nearly 11 years later, in 2015, she was awarded the Distinguished Presidential Medal of Freedom in her honor. And that concludes, again, my segment on Shirley Chisholm. This is Walter Pierce, student host. And, you know, again, I wanted to talk about Shirley Chisholm because she was a pioneer for seeing more women at a position in politics where you really did not see them. It was very nice to, you know, hear what she also had to say about her campaign, you know, saying she's not a candidate for the women's movement for the country, but she's for the people, you know. And that is something, you know, a lot of people might view differently, but when I see it, you know, she's a candidate for all people, and she wants the best for everybody in the country and everybody at that particular moment. That's what her best interest is. And, you know, unfortunately, she didn't get the supporting and backing of, you know, a lot of black leaders during the time. But, you know, it was still something that a lot of people looked up to. And her involvement later on, you know, in the NAACP, you know, also in the National Organization for Women, she, you know, she was always an advocate for women. But, you know, at the end of the day, she is somebody who has a very, you know, who is a role model for a lot of people currently. And, you know, just rest in peace, Shirley Chisholm. And, again, thank you for listening.
Okay. Well, you know, this country and throughout the world, in fact, there's always been a problem with women in being seen in leadership roles. And that could have been some of the pushback that Shirley Chisholm probably did have to confront during her tenure as a congresswoman, and even when she was gutsy enough to run for president. Cheers to her. And yes, she's not gone and definitely not forgotten through her memories presented by you, Walter. Great job. As we continue musically, I have a little something from the past, Main Line. Check it out.
Welcome back, everybody. And,
you're tuned to Quest Community Vibration.
Yeah,
and
we're
talking over one another.
Yeah,
I just want to say, Walter, words have meanings that we can comprehend, like definitions. And take it away.
Yeah, welcome back, everybody, to the show. We're almost to that halfway point of the show, but now it is time for our weekly segment of definitions. And see, this segment provides the listener with words and their meanings so that we can achieve together a common basis to say we care and we believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definition controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And my definition for today is adapt. And, you know, there's many definitions for the word adapt, but the one that I'm using for today is to become adjusted to new conditions. And this definition really applies to, you know, the current time period that we're in right now, where we're having a change in presidency. And, you know, people who supported the other side, obviously showed their outrage and showed their towards how they felt about this. And, you know, the reality for them is, you know, it's nothing they could really do at this moment. The former president has already gave this message and has already left the office, and it is time for a new president. And, you know, that's what people really have to start to understand and start to learn. Everything's not going to be how you want it, and there's going to be a change. And the best thing we could do is, besides, you know, attacking and trying to bring up a lot of hate and a lot of heat towards the other side, you know, this would be a time where we try to, you know, criticize the mistakes, of course, but also come together on a common basis so that we can move on and move forward. Because, you know, the current time we're in, you know, the division is really being sparked up a lot in this country. Like, it's really divided in a lot of our thinking. And, you know, it's okay to have different viewpoints on ideas, but at a certain point when you're dealing with people, you have to end up coming together and coming to an understanding of how both parties, you know, could receive good and could improve. And a lot of media sources, you know, that push a certain side and always tries to persuade you to come to a certain side, besides actually giving you the information and you coming up with your own idea so that it can be easier for people to communicate. But, you know, that's not what I see the media actually doing. I see them trying to divide, and that is the current state that we're in, and that is something that's going to have to change and something that we're going to have to understand what they're doing so that we could move away from that thinking.
Well, one of the things that I've seen is not – I haven't seen the media be perfect, but one of the things that I've actually seen is social media giving a platform to everyone's perspective, up, down, left, right, and just putting it on the floor for people to make their own deductions. And sometimes unwittingly, unknowingly, people – have seen information on social media platforms and taken it as the gospel, right?
Yeah.
And I've actually seen news media try to clear it up, right, in some form or fashion. And so I do think that adapt is a great word, and we're going to continue musically with a song that epitomizes what I think about music, and the title of this song is I Love Music, and it's Quest Community Vibration, live on 89.5 on the campus of Seton Hall in South Palm.
I love music.
now it's time for our segment of Chains of Events. Now, Chains of Events is an interpretation of the news as it affects the community from the Alloys of Newark. But this particular story, I was motivated by Walter Pierce, my student host, who said to me, "Mr. Bay, you have to produce a Chains of Events." And I was like, I don't know what I want to do. This January 20th inauguration of our new president, Joe Biden, I just knew I had to come up with something that was relative to our new president, but relative also to the disparities that speak to the perseverance of a people. And I'm talking about black people in America, and I'm talking about white supremacy. You see, Chains of Events is a report on events in politics, education, law, business, religion, and science. Chains of Events reveals the interpretation of one event to another so that you, yeah, I'm talking to you, the listener, will know. Now, as I was trying to find something that would relate to what we were going to be talking about tonight, I found myself looking nowhere else but Google, of course. And through my search, what would I find? After listening to the news this evening and just trying to find something that was relatable, something that would make sense to today's time, something that we could use in tonight's or this morning's broadcast. And what did I find? I found out that in 1871, President Ulysses S. Grant actually had put out the fire of white supremacy here in the United States. And I also found out that there it was a particular article that speaks directly to it. The article was written, I keep on trying to find the article, which I've had in front of me, and, dealing with the technology, I'm having a little problem because things are popping up and disappearing in front of me, but pow, there it is, it appears, okay? So I apologize. Here we go. The fight against white supremacy could learn something from America's first war on terror. You see, this particular article was written in its opinion in the Washington Post, and it was written April 8th, 2019, by a gentleman by the name of Charles Lane. And he writes, 148 years ago, for the month of April in 2019, a member of Congress decried what we saw as a double standard regarding the protection of U.S. citizens from political violence. Now, overseas, Representative Benjamin Butler of Massachusetts said on the floor of the House, "No nation can unjustly lay its hand upon an American citizen and arrest anger without calling down upon it the whole power of the Republic." Yet, at the very moment in America's South, Butler noted a domestic organization called the Ku Klux Klan was murdering blacks and whites who supported the post-Civil War program of racial equality known as Reconstruction at the time. And the Klan was operating with a virtual impunity. "Can it be," Butler demanded, "of those who insisted crime fighting should be left up to the states, that an American citizen is protected with the whole power of the government everywhere, except on our own soil, under his own roof tree, and covered by our own flag?" Congress duly passed the Ku Klux Klan Act, and President Ulysses S. Grant signed it into law on April 20th, 1871. I bet you didn't know that, Walter. The federal government, and this is what Chains of Events is about, the federal government could suspend the right the writ of habeas corpus in the Klan-dominated areas and used federal marshals and troops to arrest Klan terrorists and bring them to trial in federal courts. To this day, it remains arguably the toughest federal law ever aimed specifically at a white supremacist terrorist threat. It launched what might be called the first U.S. war on terror, including the use of covert operatives, detectives from the Secret Service to infiltrate the Klan. As if to mark the occasion, congressional Democrats led by Richard Durbin had just introduced the Democratic Terrorism Prevention Act, whose promise, like Butler's, is that terrorism is terrorism, whether it is originates at home or abroad, on the racist right of any organization. Now, recent events have, in 2015, the murder of 9 African Americans by white supremacists in Charlotte, South Carolina, and to the massacre of Jews at a Pittsburgh synagogue, and you know, without speaking any more to that, the whole point here is on January 20th, 2021, President Joe Biden actually spoke not to this particular law, which I'm sure he's aware of, but he spoke to stamping out white supremacy and terrorism, and that he would not allow it. And he reminded me that politicians are here not to be self-serving, but to serve the people. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is our segment of Chain of Events. Now, I'd like to give a moment to Walter, if you would like to make any kind of comment after I just said a mouthful.
I'm gonna just keep it short. You know, I appreciate you for sharing that information I didn't know. Again, him denouncing white supremacy is something that you know, we've seen today of how was kind of uplifting their voices. But you know, but as you've seen in the past, you know, we've obviously wanted and made strides to end it. And yeah, that's what I have to say about that.
Okay. Well, my whole point, Walter, was to show you that in 1871, the same problem existed. And one of the things I continuously hear is the country and the nation being divided. Well, I'm here to say that this country was divided the moment that they brought slaves to this land and put them in slavery. And so it's something that still has to be fought. It's something that still has to be eradicated. And, you know, it's not like something new under the sun. There is an act to fight against white supremacy already created in America. I think what we need to do is implement it. And when we don't learn from our lessons of the past, we are doomed to repeat them. And now, musically, we can do it.
Looking at fashion dying, emotion.
Okay, and now we're back. Now, we want you to pull back the curtain and see a different perspective and a contribution that you'll find in this Quest moment. Walter.
Yes, welcome back, everybody, to the show. We have about 12 minutes left, but I want to get into a curtain and... You know, the intro for curtains is an exposure and analysis of artists and their work behind the curtain and the stage. Many recording artists and companies have grown rich from the support of the community. But what benefits has the community gained from the artists? Curtains is a review of their musical growth and history, the impact of their particular style and genius of the general moods and attitudes of the listening audience. Lyrical and musical social consciousness as presented by the artist over a period of time between CD release. Curtains serves best as an introduction and an exploration of a particular artist, his or her genius, and their involvement in influencing all people, style, and creativity in the world today. Now, without any further ado, I would like to introduce my curtain, which is Muddy Waters. And you know, Muddy Waters, whose nickname came from his proclivity for playing in a creek as a boy, he grew up in the cotton country of the Mississippi Delta, where he was raised principally by his grandmother on the Stovall Plantation near Clarksdale, Mississippi. He taught himself to play harmonica as a child and took up guitar at age 17. He eagerly absorbed the classic Delta blues style of Robert Johnson, Funhouse, and others while developing a style of his own. As a young man, he drove a tractor on the sharecropper plantation, and on the weekends he operated the cabin in which he lived in a juke house, where visitors could party, would throw parties at. In 1943, Waters, like millions of other African Americans in the South who moved to cities in the North and West during the Great Migration from 1916 to 1970, relocated to Chicago. There, he began playing clubs and bars on the city's south and west sides while earning a living working in a paper mill and later driving a truck. In 1944, he bought his first electric guitar, which cut more easily through the noise of crowded bars. He soon broke with country blues by playing electric guitar in a shimmering slide style. In 1946, pianist Sunnyland Slim, another Delta native, helped Waters land a contract with Aristocrat Records, for which he made several remarkable records. By 1948, Aristocrat had become Chess Records, taking its name from Leonard and Phil Chess, and Waters was recording a string of hits for it, and it began with I Feel Like Going Home and I Can't Be Satisfied. His early aggressive, electrically amplified band, including pianist Otis Spann, guitarist Jimmy Rogers, harmonica virtuoso Little Walter, created closely integrated support for his passionate singing, which featured dramatic shouts, swoops, and different other styles as well. Tours of clubs in the South and Midwest in the 1940s and 50s gave way after 1958 concert tours of the United States and Europe, including frequent dates at jazz, folk, and blues festivals. Over the years, some of Chicago's premier blues musicians did stints in Waters' band, including harmonica players James Cotton and Junior Wells, as well as guitarist Buddy Guy. Towards the end of his career, concentrated on singing and playing the guitar only occasionally. He was a member of the inaugural class of 1980 of the Blues Hall of Fame, a major influence on a variety of rock musicians, most notably the Rolling Stones, who took their name from the song Rolling Stone and made a pilgrimage to Chess Records, to Chess to record. Waters was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1987. Six of his albums earned Grammy Awards and received the Grammy Lifetime Achievement in 1992. And that concludes my segment on Muddy Waters. Again, this is student host Walter Pierce. A lot of accomplishments Muddy Waters has had throughout his career. You know, being able to move up north for him to Chicago really helped spark his career because that's where he was able to start up and attract a huge audience of African Americans and others all across the country. As I said, you know, he was able to tour even to another country, another continent actually in Europe, and, you know, continue his success here in the United States. So again, shout out to Muddy Waters and rest in peace to him.
Okay, so that was a quick cut by Muddy Waters. Walter, I have to ask you, what do you know about the blues?
Man, I don't, you know, as the elders would say, what you know about that? I ain't gonna lie, you know, I hear a little bit about the blues. But when I think of the blues, what I think about is, you know, telling a story, you know, really expressing a story throughout music of hardship and, you know, just making it into some very beautiful music, including a lot of amazing instruments.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people dreaded the sound of the blues because it told a story of a people in pain. And, you know, the dominant society didn't want to hear that. But good choice. So at this time, with 2 minutes to go, we have Chris on the line, and we're going to see what he has to bring to the table. Let's see. Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. What's going on, family? So far, the semester's been pretty easy to me, so that's what I've been dealing with. But I got a quick definition for everybody. Definition, this segment provides listeners with words and their meanings so that we can achieve together a common basis and say that we care and believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definition controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. So today's definition that I have is diaspora, and its etymology comes from the Greek word diasperin, meaning scattered. So the definition for diaspora is the dispersion of any people from their original homeland, and that relates to the African diaspora because our original people were taken from their homelands. So if no one ever actually understood what diaspora meant, when we go over segments and you talk about how things relate to our African diaspora, there it is. So now everyone can have a good grasp on what it means.
Okay, thank you. Diaspora.
Tomato, diaspora, okay.
All right. Walter, I'd like for you to sum up the show and wrap it up and send us on.
I would like to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations live on 89.5. You know, you woke up very early to listen to this show, and I hope you have a good rest of your day as well. But again, Quest Youth Radio is the best youth radio.
And so I would like to thank you once again for joining us as we presented a different perspective of our diaspora. And this is Quest Community Vibration.